This is Dave Emery, and I am going to be doing this program live. This is going to be a seat of the pants flight. I have so much information going on, and there is so much going on. I am, on the one hand, very excited about some of the things that are coming out about the coronavirus. Excited because it is, not only am I convinced that this is at one level biological warfare, but I think that what is going on is not only a textbook example of hybrid warfare in action, but it is absolutely brilliant in its execution, involving a combination of the spreading of a virus, one which, by the way, was something very similar, was synthesized in a U.S. laboratory. In 2008, I had a post about that. That link was broken. The link to a National Institute of Health website was broken 4 days or 5 days after I put it on. There is another link now. But using social media and the media to spread panic and alarm about this is really quite remarkable, and we should not lose sight of the fact that the CIA's cyber warfare capability involves the ability to use Chinese or to simulate Chinese internet activity. More about that later. The use of social media to spread panic, and our regular media to spread panic, is quite remarkable. And one of the things I find really fascinating, and we'll get into the weaponized media in our next show or maybe two shows, but the economic warfare combined with online activity and the spreading of the virus is more than a little interesting to me. A few introductory remarks. I would note that one of the things we're hearing about is the how frightening this is. So far, it's unclear how bad this is in China or how bad it is going to get. They're talking about 23,000 people infected, 600 dead. As of 2 weeks ago, 8,200 Americans had died of the flu, and that in the country roughly one-fifth the size of China. The people who have been affected by this virus are generally older people who are either chronically ill and or have other ailments, in other words, compromised immune systems. Those are the people who die of the flu in the U.S. So this is, as far as we can tell, not that bad. China is on lockdown. Part of it is, I think, that China is very vulnerable. They have a consumer-oriented, a consumption-oriented economy and manufactured, and they are very vulnerable to public opinion. Also, what is going on is occurring in the context of a readily verifiable, and more or less, if one chooses to look, overt destabilization effort against China. The National Endowment for Democracy, a misnomer, an Orwellian misnomer if ever there was one, is a CIA cutout, and they have been financing the individuals and institutions involved in the, quote, pro-democracy, unquote, movement in Hong Kong. I've talked about that, and the Uyghurs, the Muslim minority in resource, not mineral resource, and the petroleum-rich Xinjiang province have been the focal point of NATO destabilization since the early 1950s. They also have links with Al-Qaeda, the Muslim Brotherhood, ISIS. In fact, American combat troops actually engaged Uyghur jihadis in the early stages of the Afghan war. Whether they also engaged Uyghur jihadis while fighting ISIS, I don't know. It certainly seems like a possibility. It would be impossible. I'm going to talk about the media component to this in an upcoming show, but combining weaponized media, and our media are nothing if not weaponized, with online disinformation or simply reasonable questions about what is going on. We're hearing about how this is proving how weak China is and how Chinese don't trust the Communist Party or their government, which, you know, to a certain extent may well be true. An awful lot of Americans don't trust our government either. And in fact, the Republicans, who are the embodiment of the economic and national security establishment, have run for decades successfully on an anti-government platform. But there are some things I want to know. Got a lot of things to cover here, so I'm going to plunge right in. Note the lack of coverage of the following. First of all, I read into the record, I have a post on this, synthetic recombination bat SARS-like coronavirus is infectious in cultured cells and in mice, by Michelle N. Becker and a bunch of other authors. This was on a National Center for Biotechnology Information, a subsidiary website of the National Institutes of Health, on November 26th of 2008. That link worked just fine when I put that post up on Friday, January 31st. It has been broken. I have another link that is present, and there has been no coverage except in both Reuters and in Agence France-Presse of the fact that Thai doctors had successfully treated this ailment with a drug, a cocktail of antivirals used to treat flu and HIV. They are oseltamivir and lopinavir and ritonavir, and there has been almost no coverage of that in the U.S. that I can tell. There is a U.S. manufactured antiviral that has proved somewhat successful. That has gotten coverage, but if Reuters and Agence France-Presse can cover this, but it remains blacked out in the U.S., which to a certain extent it appears to be, that is in and of itself significant. I'll have the Reuters story to accompany the Agence France-Presse that I read into the record in For the Record program number 1111, our last show. As I was recording that program last Tuesday, I was getting articles being sent to me by listeners and by Roy of Hollywood, a pat on the shoulder for Roy of Hollywood, who airs these shows late night at midnight on Wednesday night / Thursday morning on KPFK-FM, the Pacifica station in Los Angeles, sent me an article from the Merkava website by Dr. Joseph Merkava from February 4th of 2020, and I neglected in my haste to paste a portion of that article, so I'm going to reread some key aspects of this. Dr. Merkava titled this, Novel Coronavirus, the Latest Pandemic Scare. I do think that there is a very real aspect of propaganda and / terrorism, psychoterrorism involved with this. However, what is very interesting here, and the section I forgot, moratorium on SARS and MERS experiments lifted in 2017. This section reads, as mentioned, a number of reports raise questions about the source of the 2019 nCoV, that is the coronavirus behind the current epidemic. For starters, a 2014 NPR article was rather prophetic. It discusses the October 2014 U.S. moratorium on experiments on coronaviruses like SARS and MERS, as well as influenza virus that might make the viruses more pathogenic and or easy to spread among humans. The ban came on the heels of, quote, high-profile lab mishaps, unquote, at the CDC, and, quote, extremely controversial flu experiments, unquote, in which the bird flu virus was engineered to become more lethal and contagious between ferrets. The goal was to see if it could mutate and become more lethal and contagious between humans, causing future pandemics. However, for the past decade, there have been red flags raised in the scientific community about biosecurity breaches in high-containment biological labs in the U.S. and globally. There were legitimate fears that a lab-created superflu pathogen might escape the confines of biosecurity labs where researchers are conducting experiments. It's a reasonable fear, certainly considering that there have been many safety breaches at biolabs in the U.S. and other countries. This is what is so important. Well, there are more a few things. The federal moratorium on lethal virus experiments in the U.S. was lifted at the end of December of 2017, in other words, at the end of the year, a little over 2 years ago. One more time. The federal moratorium on lethal virus experiments in the U.S. was lifted at the end of December of 2017, even though researchers announced in 2015 that they had created a lab-created hybrid coronavirus similar to that of SARS that was capable of infecting both human airway cells and mice. I wondered when I read this if that was the same virus that was in that November 26, 2008 paper. It appears to have been the same. As I mentioned, when I put up the article that you can find on the left-hand side of the SpitfireList.com website, I linked to that website, and the link worked just fine on Friday, January 31st, a year ago. Seems like a year ago, a week ago today. And by last night, it had been broken. So Dr. Merkava has this from 2015. It was actually 2008. I also noted one of the reasons I suspect Wuhan was targeted with this is that they opened in Wuhan, the Chinese, opened a level 4 containment lab in 2018. There is also discussion of how the Chinese, the speculation, they, a person who was involved with a biosecurity consultant. So the Chinese are much more lax in their security than we are. I don't know. But I found that interesting, and I suspect that the fallback position will be that the Chinese were experimenting on Wuhan, and they're just, you know, those Chinese can't do anything right, and boy, they blew it. I am going to repeat something else. Bear in mind that the moratorium on experiments of this kind was lifted at the end of 2017, about 2 years ago. Then, last October, the following, a section of Dr. Merkel's paper, coronavirus outbreak simulation took place in October of 2019. Equally curious is the fact that the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security, the World Economic Forum, note the World Economic Forum, we're going to get to the economics of this, and Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation sponsored a novel coronavirus pandemic preparedness exercise on October 18th, 2019 in New York called, quote, Event 201, unquote. The simulation predicted a global death toll of 65 million people within a span of 18 months. As reported by Forbes of December 12th of 2019, quote, the experts ran through a carefully designed, detailed simulation of a new fictional viral illness called CAPS, or Coronavirus Acute Pulmonary Syndrome. This was modeled after previous epidemics like SARS and MERS, the testing on those viruses and mutated versions of same was lifted a little less than 2 years prior to this. Continuing, Dr. Merkel notes, sounds exactly like NCIP, doesn't it? Yet the new coronavirus responsible for NCIP had not yet been identified at the time of the simulation, and the first case wasn't reported until 2 months later. Forbes also refers to the fictional pandemic as Disease X, unquote, the same designation used by the Telegraph in UK in its January 24th, 2020 video report, quote, could this coronavirus be Disease X, unquote, which suggests that media outlets were briefed and there was coordination ahead of time with regard to the use of certain keywords and catchphrases in news reports and opinion articles. Johns Hopkins University, again, was the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security, was one, along with the World Economic Forum, note that, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Johns Hopkins University is the biggest recipient of research grants from federal agencies, including the National Institutes of Health, National Science Foundation, and Department of Defense, and has received millions of dollars in research grants from the Gates Foundation. In 2016, Johns Hopkins spent more than $2 billion on research projects, leading all U.S. universities in research spending for the 38th year in a row. If research funded by federal agencies such as the Department of Defense or the Health and Human Services is classified as being performed, quote, in the interest of national security, unquote, it is exempt from Freedom of Information Act or FOIA requests. Research conducted under the Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Authority or BARDA is completely shielded from FOIA requests by the public. I would interject, why? Additionally, agencies may deny FOIA requests and withhold information if government officials conclude that shielding it from public view, quote, protects trade secrets and commercial or financial information which could harm the competitive posture or business interests of a company. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention are under the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention under the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services states that its mission is to, quote, protect America from health, safety, and security threats, both foreign and the U.S. Clearly, it will be difficult to obtain information about government funded biomedical research on microbes like coronavirus being conducted at major universities or by pharmaceutical corporations in biohazard labs. How likely is it then that the coronavirus outbreak making people so sick today, quote, suddenly, unquote, emerged simply because people ate bats and snakes in the Wuhan market? He thinks that this was, Dr. Merkel, that is, a biosecurity accident. I don't think this was any accident at all. I'm going to jump ever so quickly ahead to something we're going to wrap the show up with. I knew this country had its racial prejudices. I didn't realize till the O.J. Simpson case, and I've done a monumental amount of work on that, how prejudiced Americans were against black people. And I knew Americans harbored some prejudices against Chinese. I didn't realize how bigoted Americans were against Chinese and perhaps other Asians. More about that later, because this part of the Psy War, psychological warfare aspect to this is whipping up anti-Chinese sentiment and fear as well in other countries. More about that later. Another Psy War aspect of that, we're being told, one of the most alarming aspects of this virus is that it can be transmitted before people show symptoms. Well, that, I don't doubt that that's true. That's also true of most, certainly a great many, upper respiratory infections, including the common cold. I believe the flu as well, but put a question by that. I know the common cold is true. That is not only not unusual, it is routine for upper respiratory infections. And note, again, that as of 2 weeks ago, it's probably several hundred higher, 8,200 Americans have died of the flu. So far, 600 people in China confirmed dead. That in the country almost five times this size. And yet, we're not seeing travel restrictions against Americans traveling abroad because it can bring the flu. Again, the Psy War aspect of this is very interesting. And when one combines weaponized media, and I'll be talking about that more in our next show, with the use of social media and in our series about Surveillance Valley and our work on the Arab Spring, which was a psyop. We talked about the use of social media. Public opinion can be gamed in a way that it had never been. And so, by the way, can markets. I find one of the most interesting things about this is not only the economic dimension to this, but also the possibilities, and I suspect that is more than just a possibility, for what is in effect insider trading. If a player or players in the market had advanced notice of something like this, the possibilities for making a tremendous amount of money off this would be enormous.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
Now, I'm going to recap highlights of two articles talking about the relationship between Steve Bannon, maven of the alt-right, and at the core, as we looked at in For the Record 1089 and 1093, at the core of the anti-China effort. He has revived the old Cold War front, the Committee on the Present Danger. Steve Bannon is at the very epicenter of the anti-China destabilization effort. He also is tied into two individuals, a Chinese billionaire named Guo Wenhui, who has been exiled, and also a guy named J. Kyle Bass is a Texan, a very wealthy Texan, I suspect billionaire, maybe only 100 million. Millions. He made his fortune from betting against the subprime mortgage situation in the crash of 2008. In other words, this is a guy who uses his investment skills to bet against things which, when they then collapse, he makes the money. He was involved in the speculation, involved with the 2008 financial collapse, and most people with their heads screwed on, right, knew that that was going to come at some point. But he made his money from betting against the subprime mortgage. He also was reported last spring to be in the position to make a great deal of money if China's economy went south. He has denied that he was involved with, he has any Chinese equities. That may well be true. I mean, for all I know, he's lying. But it also is misleading, because a great many companies and a great many businesses that had exposure to China have also tanked, so that one could make a great deal of money without being involved with Chinese equities. But Steve Bannon is tied to J. Kyle Bass and to Mr. Guo. They have been spreading rumors about China, deliberately or accidentally. The People's Liberation Army deliberately and or accidentally spreading the coronavirus. That this has received a lot of publicity on 4chan and 2chan. I would also note that J. Kyle Bass is very close to and very possibly financially involved with a key mover and shaker in the Trump administration called Tommy Hicks. He is a hunting buddy of Donald Trump Jr. on good terms with Jared Kushner. And even more importantly, he has been involved and apparently is involved with the national security establishment, including apparently CIA and also some of the elements of the Defense Department and the national security establishment involved with the 5G initiative that in turn is competing with China's Huawei, and they are trying to exclude Huawei from foreign markets, claiming that this would be a national security concern. Wouldn't surprise me if Huawei did electronic surveillance. That is what the internet is all about. It is a weapon. It is not a wonderful tool for enlightenment. As we looked at in our long series on Surveillance Valley, it is a weapon. But note that, again, J. Kyle Bass and very possibly Tommy Hicks stand to make a lot of money if China's economy goes south. They're tied to Steve Bannon, the epicenter of the anti-China movement, and to this guy, Guo Wenwei. Even more importantly, perhaps, is the fact that Steve Bannon is tied to Robert Mercer of the Cambridge Analytica scandal that we looked at great length in For the Record Program 946 and others. We came back to that in For the Record 1077. Reading now from a very interesting and useful book about the growth of not fascism, but the online fascism of 4chan, and things that I know very little about, how it grew out of Japanese anime, and some really unfortunate people who have frequented those boards. This is offered by Bale Baron, B-E-R-A-N. It came from something awful. How a toxic troll army accidentally memed Donald Trump in the office. It's an excellent book. There are parts of it, I think, that need to be... Well, the online component is very interesting. I think it is in some ways simplistic, in some ways very insightful. It is a useful book, and I definitely recommend it. However, noting here about Robert Mercer, he was the guy who financed Cambridge Analytica. He is very close to and involved with and supports Donald Trump too. But Steve Bannon, who is at the epicenter of the anti-China movement and is tied to Miles Guo Wenwei, J. Kyle Bass, who in turn is tied to Tommy Hicks. Now, note the following about Robert Mercer. In the 1970s, Mercer programmed machine learning, artificial intelligences to process vast sets of data and so predict what was supposed to be the central mystery of capitalism, the movement of markets. And, well, they did and still do. The hedge fund for which Mercer worked, Renaissance Technologies, has earned an average yield of 70% each year, making Mercer one of the richest men on the planet. And he, again, is deeply involved with Steve Bannon, has underwritten Cambridge Analytica, Breitbart, and a great many other things. One more time, because moving the role of artificial intelligence to predict markets. In the 1970s, Mercer programmed machine learning artificial intelligences to process vast sets of data and so predict what was supposed to be the central mystery of capitalism, the movement of markets. And well, they did and still do. The hedge fund for which Mercer worked, Renaissance Technologies, has earned an average yield of 70% each year, making Mercer one of the richest men on the planet. Now, put that into the cocktail with the blender with the following. Now, first, from a BuzzFeed News article from February 3rd of 2020 by Jane Litvinenko. And I've read these articles into the record of For the Record 1111. I'm going to reread and emphasize some highlights. Again, Jane Litvinenko, L-Y-T-V-Y-N-E-N-K-O from BuzzFeed News of February 3rd of 2020. A site tied to Steve Bannon is writing fake news about the coronavirus. Now, some highlights. On January 25th, G News published a false story saying that the Chinese government was preparing to admit that the coronavirus originated in one of its labs. It did not, but the article still racked up over 19,000 tweets and 18,000 Facebook engagements, according to social tracking website BuzzSumo. Note the following. The website also published a questionable document that fed a conspiracy that the Chinese military spread the disease deliberately. That document, which seems to have come from G News originally, has been popular on anonymous message boards like 4chan and 2chan. G News is part of Guo Media, G News is part of Guo Media, a project funded by Chinese billionaire Guo Wenli, also known as Miles Kwok and Miles Guo. Now, note the following. In 2018, Guo's organization signed what Axios reported to be a $1 million contract with Steve Bannon, former White House strategist and former chair of the hyperpartisan news website, news site Breitbart, which, by the way, got money from Robert Mercer. The contract required Bannon to make introductions to media personalities and advise on industry standards, unquote, according to Axios. Guo and Bannon frequently appeared together in videos on G News that attacked the Chinese government. Now, note who the Bannon and Guo are tied to. Another person connected to G News, hedge fund manager J. Kyle Bass, also spread a false coronavirus claim in a tweet. His hedge fund reportedly had investments that will increase in value if the Chinese economy fails. Bass has remained a China critic, frequently echoing Bannon. Note the following. Another person connected to G News, hedge fund manager J. Kyle Bass, spread a false coronavirus claim in a tweet. His hedge fund reportedly had investments that will increase in value if the Chinese economy fails. Okay? His hedge fund reportedly had investments that will increase in value if Chinese economy fails. Bass has remained a China critic, frequently echoing Bannon. His false tweet. A husband and wife Chinese spy team were recently removed from a level 4 infectious disease facility in Canada for sending pathogens to the Wuhan facility. The husband specialized in coronavirus research, Bass tweeted, linking to a CBC News article that did not support his claim, unquote. When asked about his tweet, Bass said he had no plan to remove it, not particularly if he stands to benefit from a downturn or a collapse in the Chinese economy. I am extremely concerned about the spread of misinformation about the coronavirus by the Chinese government, he said. Bass is the chair of the Rule of Law Foundation, a nonprofit that runs banner ads at the top and bottom of the G News website soliciting donations, unquote. He also claimed that the Rule of Law Foundation was separate from the $100 million fund started by Guo and Bannon called the Rule of Law Fund. Now, it may be, as Bass has claimed, that he's no longer in Chinese equities. It does not say whether or not he sold those. Maybe he short sold some. Who knows? But that does not mean that his $143 million hedge fund investment will not make a lot of money from the collapse or downturn in the Chinese economy, which is occurring. There are many businesses, including many American businesses, Asian businesses, the petroleum industry, that have already been hurt by the coronavirus outbreak. We'll talk about the Cy War and economic aspects. Now, note the following article, this from ProPublica of July 22nd of 2019 by Jake Pearson, P-E-A-R-S-O-N. We read this into the record as well. Want to meet with the Trump administration? Donald Trump Jr.'s hunting buddy can help. This again from July 22nd of last year, 2019. Some highlights. Over the past 2 years, the Trump administration has been grappling with how to handle the transition to the next generation of mobile broadband technology. With spending expected to run into hundreds of millions of dollars, the administration views it as an ultra-high-stakes competition between U.S. and Chinese companies with enormous implications both for technology and for national security. Top officials from a raft of departments have been meeting to hash out the best approach, but there's been one person at some of the discussions who has a different background. He is Donald Trump Jr.'s hunting buddy. Tommy Hicks Jr., 41, isn't a government official. He is a wealthy private investor, and he has been part of discussions related to China and technology with top officials from the Treasury Department, National Security Council, Commerce Department, and others, according to emails and documents obtained by ProPublica. In one email, Hicks refers to a meeting at, quote, Langley, unquote, an apparent reference to the CIA's headquarters. Now, note whom he's connected to. Hicks used his connections to arrange for a hedge fund manager friend, J. Kyle Bass, who has $143 million in investments that will pay off if China's economy tanks, to present his views on the Chinese economy to high-level government officials at an interagency meeting at the Treasury Department, according to the documents. One more time. Hicks used his connections to arrange for a hedge fund manager friend, J. Kyle Bass, who has $143 million in investments that will pay off if China's economy tanks. Skipping down. Hicks leveraged his Dallas financial network to become a top Trump campaign fundraiser in 2016 and a vice chairman of the inaugural finance committee. In January, he was named co-chairman of the Republican National Committee, even before becoming the second highest-ranking GOP official. Hicks was a frequent White House guest. He liked to have lunch in the White House mess with his half-sister, who worked for a time in the communications operations. This was not apparently Hope Hicks. Hicks would then stroll the halls, according to a former senior administration official, dropping into offices for impromptu chats with various officials, including Jared Kushner. These sort of connections has given Hicks a convening power, the ability to call together multiple officials. He basically opened the door for having a conversation with people who I didn't know but needed to know, unquote, said Robert Spalding, a former senior director for strategic planning at the National Security Council during the Trump administration. The efforts, detailed in hundreds of pages of government emails and other documents obtained under the Freedom of Information Act, show that Hicks had access to the highest levels of government to influence policymaking in ways that could lead to painful economic outcomes for the Chinese and a potentially lucrative result for Hicks's hedge fund friend, Bass. One more time. The efforts, detailed in hundreds of pages of government emails and other documents obtained under the Freedom of Information Act, show that Hicks had access to the highest levels of government to influence policy making in ways that could lead to painful economic outcomes for the Chinese and a potentially lucrative result for Hicks's hedge fund friend, Bass. Bass presented his views on China's banking system in the office of Keith Tarbert, T-A-R-B-E-R-T, an assistant secretary at Treasury in charge of international markets and investment policy, and a powerful intergovernmental committee that reviews foreign investments in the U.S. for national security concerns. Among the officials at the meeting with Tarbert were Bill Hinman, the director of the Division of Corporation Finance at the Securities and Exchange Commission, and Ray Washburn, a wealthy Dallas restaurant owner and family friend of Hicks, who was nominated by Trump to head the Overseas Private Investment Corporation. Hicks and Bass, both Dallas residents and longtime denizens of the financial community there, have invested together since at least 2011, according to securities filings and court records. One more time. Hicks and Bass, both Dallas residents and longtime denizens of the financial community there have invested together since at least 2011, according to securities filings and court records. But it's not clear if Hicks or his family have an investment in Bass's China-related funds. Reached twice on his cell phone, Hicks declined to be interviewed by ProPublica. In the second call, in June, Hicks didn't dispute that he and his family have invested in Bass's funds. But when asked to detail a business relationship, he cut the conversation short one more time. But it's not clear if Hicks or his family have an investment in Bass's China-related funds. Reached twice on his cell phone, Hicks declined to be interviewed by ProPublica. In the second call in June, Hicks didn't dispute that he and his family have invested in Bass's funds, but when asked to detail their business relationship, he cut the conversation short, skipping down again. Bass, who made his name and fortune by betting against subprime mortgages before the crash and is known for large bets that economies or certain macro trends would turn downward, declined the comment. One more time. Bass, who made his name and fortune by betting against subprime mortgages before the crash and is known for large bets that economies or certain macro trends would turn downward, declined the comment. An administration official briefed on the Bass meeting at the Treasury downplayed it as a strictly listening session, unquote. He acknowledged that the review did not include an examination of any financial relationship between Hicks and Bass. Bass has become a vocal advocate for an aggressive U.S. policy toward China. On Twitter and on cable business channels, he's denounced everything from the country's Communist Party government to its business practices. Securities filings show Bass raised $143 million from about 81 investors in two funds, investments that would benefit if China's currency were devalued or the country faced credit or banking crises. One more time. Bass has become a vocal advocate for an aggressive U.S. policy toward China. On Twitter and on cable business channels, he's denounced everything from the country's Communist Party government to its business practices. Securities filings show Bass raised $143 million from 81 investors in two funds, investments that would benefit if China's currency were devalued or the country faced credit or banking crises. In April, that's last year, in a letter to his investors, Bass wrote that his company, Heyman Capital Management, was positioned for coming problems in Hong Kong and was set up to, quote, maintain a massive asymmetry to a negative outcome in Hong Kong and or China. Well, Hong Kong, their economy has already tanked, and China's is tanking, certainly going down. Note that he said he, by the way, denies he holds any Chinese equities, but his company is set up to maintain a massive asymmetry. In other words, if Hong Kong goes down, his investments go up. If China goes down, his investments go up. One of the areas of contention, by the way, is the 5G initiative. Continuing, Hicks' work on the 5G initiative was extensive. He was part of an informal group led by then-NSC official Spalding that advocated for a strategy in which the federal government would plan out a national policy for 5G. That same month, Hicks attended a 5G meeting that he arranged with Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, who, by the way, has been celebrating the coronavirus, saying that it may cause businesses to come back here. Commerce, that's his department, Wilbur Ross's. Commerce plays a key role in the future of 5G since a division within the agency manages government spectrum and another maintains a list of companies the government believes are or will become national security threats. Companies that end up on that list can be effectively shut out from global deal-making. The meeting with Ross focused heavily on the threat of China, said Ira Greenstein, who served as a White House aide and was part of Spalding's 5G crew. It isn't clear what influence, if any, Hicks had in those decisions, but his profile is only rising. In April, he led a Republican delegation to Taiwan alongside a U.S. government delegation. Hicks met with the country's president, Tsai Ing-wen, who has lately been positioning her government's corporations as safer providers of 5G equipment than those in China. Tsai thanked the U.S. for selling arms to Taiwan. She asked Hicks to convey her regards to the Trump. That sounds like the old Kuomintang connection with Taiwan.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
Now, I'm going to run through a whole lot of articles, and I'll put some links on in the written description for this show of the effects on the global and Chinese economy of this are not only massive, but frankly come somewhat suspicious. A rare note of sanity. I'm going to talk about the weaponized medium. Oh my God, you know, the virus can be transmitted even before you have symptoms. Yeah, well, so can the common cold, so can an awful lot of upper respiratory infections. And again, there have been roughly 13 times as many Americans killed of the flu so far as by this virus in a country roughly five times the size. Op-ed column from today's New York Times, Friday, February 7th of 2020, a rare note of sanity and calm in the New York Times. Who says visiting China isn't safe? In the article by Rosie Spinks, a global tourism reporter for Skift. Among the interests that are tanking or certainly being negatively affected by this, the tourism industry and airlines. And now, as you listen to these, think about the fact that Robert Mercer runs the most successful hedge fund in the world, uses AIs to predict trends, has a 70% return on their investments at Renaissance Technologies. And bear in mind, he's tied to Steve Bannon, who's tied to Guo Wangli, and the J. Kyle Bass, who's tied to Tommy Hicks. One wonders what Robert Mercer may be making of this, and has there been any interplay between Robert Mercer and J. Kyle Bass, both very close to Steve Bannon. From, again, Who Says Visiting China Isn't Safe? Talks about why it just is not, does not make good sense to quarantine China. The United States State Department, nevertheless, is denying entry to foreigners who have recently been in China and is screening Americans who arrive home from China, as well as asking them to self-quarantine for 14 days. It has told Americans not to visit the country at all. British Airways, Lufthansa, and all three major American carriers have halted all flights to China, while the cruise line Royal Caribbean is denying boarding to any person who has traveled to, from, or through China or Hong Kong in the past 15 days. And the column goes on to talk about why this just doesn't make a lot of sense. But again, consider the following in terms of short selling, making money off of various investments that would tank because of this virus. And J. Kyle Bass and Steve Bannon and the genius of Guo Wangli are spreading disinformation. New York Times, Saturday, February 1st, Nathaniel Corkery and Annie Carney declaring health emergency, U.S. restricts travel from China, skipping down. 3 weeks after the first China-related deaths were reported, beginning again, 3 weeks after the first virus-related death was reported, China has found itself increasingly cut off from its biggest trading partner, the United States, and many other nations. Note the following. Again, New York Times, Wednesday, January 29th. Governments expand restrictions on travel to China as cases spike. Again, examine travel business, airlines. Is there any short selling? Might Robert Mercer be involved? Might J. Kyle Bass be involved or others? Skipping down in this article by Paul Moser. With China's Lunar New Year holiday nearing its end, companies ordered workers to stay home and avoid travel. The economic impact of such measures pointed to a deeper political crisis, with many people accusing the Chinese authorities online of failing to act quickly to contain the virus, even as the government continues to struggle to control its spread. One of the things we'll talk about, I mentioned it in the first show, it would be easy to spread viruses around like this. Any number of people, Uyghurs, spec op poops, members of Falun Gong, you name it. And skipping down, businesses that operate in China have issued warnings of their own. In the flurry of emails sent in recent days, General Motors, Honeywell, Bloomberg, Facebook, and other companies have warned employees not to travel within mainland China. And skipping down again, investors in Asia were gripped on Tuesday with fear about the health of the global economy for a second day, with a widespread sell-off continuing in the markets. Investors dumped stocks in companies thought to be most vulnerable to the effects of the virus. Quote, "The coronavirus is the number one threat to financial markets currently, as global investors are becoming jittery on the uncertainty," unquote, said Nigel Green, founder of an investment company, the De Vere Group. New York Times again, this from Thursday, February 4th, the business section, front page by Stanley Reed. OPEC scrambles to react as virus imperils demand. You shorted oil stocks, you can make a lot of money. By the way, on the morning of November 22nd, 1963, there was tremendous shorting as the market collapsed. The same thing happened on September 11th. I've covered that in numerous shows. But if you knew this was going to happen in advance, say, just, you know, Robert Mercer, J. Kyle Bass, who knows? Think of what you do. OPEC scrambles to react as virus imperils demand. Oil prices are plunging. That also, by the way, will hurt Russia and Iran, both targets of U.S. destabilization. China consumes something like 13 of every 40 barrels of oil that are used every day or every week. I'm not sure, but a large percentage of petroleum consumption is in China. One more time. From the New York Times of Friday, January 24th of 2020 by Alexandra Stevenson, China reels from virus and markets are on edge. Boy, are they ever. And from the first business page, as China reels from deadly virus, the global economy may be at risk. Well, that is what they need. Again, if the not only the Chinese economy tanks, but J. Kyle Bass appears to be able to benefit. Who knows about Mr. Hicks? And remember that J. Kyle Bass tied to Steve Bannon, tied to Robert Mercer, who uses AIs to predict investment trends and makes a lot of money. New York Times of Wednesday, February 5th of 2020. Virus threatens an oil industry that's already ailing, with the decline in China's demand sending crude prices lower, cutbacks by American companies may be ahead. For now, drivers are benefiting. That will help Donald Trump at the polls. Yay, we got cheaper gas. Vroom, vroom. Oh, hey, America's great. I'm going to vote for Trump. Terrific. And bear in mind that falling oil prices will hurt Iran and Russia. And if someone knew, just hypothetically, if someone knew in advance that this was going to happen, short selling would be a great way to make money. That same page, page B1 of the business section of the New York Times, Wednesday, February 5th, this past Wednesday, outbreak tests supply chains of automakers by Jack Ewing, Neil E. Boudet, and Geneva Adler. Oil, automobile manufacturers' supply chains are also something that is very much play here. Wilbur Ross, Commerce Secretary, and this was actually noted by Paul Klugman. I'll include that. I haven't got the article with me in the written description for the show. He said, well, it may be too early to take a victory lap, but now maybe various companies whose supply chains involve Chinese manufacturing will move to the U.S., New York Times, Saturday, February 1st of 2020. Continuing from the front page, virus spurs U.S. to curb air travel from China. On Wednesday, the J.P. Morgan Chase economists cut their forecast for Chinese economic growth sharply for the first quarter to incorporate the impact of the virus. They now expect that the Chinese economy will grow at an annualized rate of 4.9% in the first quarter, down from the 6.3% they previously forecast. One more time, same thing. New York Times, Thursday, January 28th, 2020. Outbreak rattles markets, spurring downturn fears, by Matt Phillips and Katie Robinson. Will that help Kyle Bass? Will that help Robert Mercer? Will it help Steve Bannon? Monday, February 3rd, 2020. New York Times, front page, Peter S. Goodman. Trade networks face new menace in coronavirus. Again, is somebody shorting this? Now, note today's New York Times. Page 810 by Simon Marks and Abdi Latif Dahir. Africa, with growing ties to China, is especially vulnerable, meaning to the virus. On the inside, in the business page, note the following by Anna Swanson. U.S. plans trade talks with Kenya to counter China's influence in Africa. The virus may help that as well. Now note the following too, right beside the article about how vulnerable Africa is to this. Tests to start in Wuhan on medicine made in U.S. On Thursday, China began enrolling patients in a clinical trial of remdesivir, an antiviral medicine made by Gilead, the American pharmaceutical giant. That does not include the drug cocktail that was successful in Thailand, which cures it successfully treats this. A 71-year-old woman treated with that drug cocktail. I don't have the things in front of me. Plus, got to get ready for Maybelline to take over for me here. This is a live broadcast. If, for example, you knew in advance this was going to happen, you could make a whole lot of money if you happen to invest in Gilead if they get the contracts. Again, the economics here is very interesting. Remember Tommy Hicks and the 5G initiative? Same day, today, Friday, February 7th of 2020, China's command of 5G is a danger, Barr says. That's Premier General William Barr. This by Katie Benner. William Barr has a background in the CIA, if he pardoned the Iran-Contra people. We'll talk more about the Psy War and weaponized maybe in our next show. But note the following as something of a teaser. Friday, January 31st of 2020. Virus fuels anti-Chinese sentiment overseas by Motoko Rich. At a time when China's rise as a global economic and military power has unsettled neighbors in Asia as well as its rivals in the West, the coronavirus is feeding into latent bigotry against the people of mainland China. A French publication, by the way, referred to the yellow flu. And note, as we wrap things up here, I talked about weaponized media. We'll get into this in our next show. New York Times, publisher of the Warren Report, and we'll talk about its links to the CIA, as the CIA's number one propaganda asset. Now, notice the weaponized verbiage. Wednesday, January 29th, New York Times, front page by Austin Ramsey, R-A-M-Z-Y. Virus puts a fractured Hong Kong on edge. First paragraph, the lead. You talk about burying the lead. Here's a burying lead. The two Hong Kong protesters were dressed head to toe in black, their faces covered in masks. They smashed their Molotov cocktails into the lobby of a public housing estate, and flames and smoke began spewing out. Well, if you're passing out leaflets, chanting, holding a placard, you're a protester. If you're dressed in black with a mask on, throwing Molotov cocktails into the lobby of the building, you are a terrorist. However, more about that in our next show. This concludes For the Record program number 1112, BioPsyOp in China. This is being recorded live on February 7th of 2019. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.